House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee will come to order. It is now 1:04. The members present are Representative Hughes, Representative Reinbold, Representative Higgins, Representative Grunberg, and myself, co-chair Ledoux. Let the record reflect that we now have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Also with us today is the LIO clerk, Alex Judice. Did I pronounce it right this time? And Chris Jones is recording. And today, the first bill that we are hearing is HCR 2, the Purple Heart State. And with us to speak about that is Representative Shelley Hughes and, I believe, her staff, Virginia Smiley.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am here to present to you House Concurrent Resolution 2, the Purple Heart State. This resolution would proclaim Alaska as a Purple Heart State, honoring the services and sacrifices of our nation's men and women in uniform who were either wounded or killed by the enemy while serving to protect the freedom enjoyed by all Americans. And as the home state to these heroes who valiantly served our nation, I think it's appropriate that Alaska become a Purple Heart State. And I would like to give you a little bit of background. I found it quite fascinating, and I hope that you will too. It'll give you a greater appreciation for what we're considering today. This particular honor is a Purple Heart is the oldest military decoration, and there are quite a number of decorations out there. And according to the Military Order of the Purple Heart, it was the first award, as I said, available to a common soldier. And it was actually established during the Revolutionary War by General George Washington. And it was made of purple cloth, and unfortunately it was discontinued after the war, and about 150 years went by, and the award was not given.
Excuse me. It was discontinued after the Civil War?
I'm sorry, after the Revolutionary War.
Excuse me.
And in the late 1920s, General Douglas MacArthur began to advocate that it be reinstated. And so in 1932, on the 200th anniversary of General George Washington's birth, it was redesigned, and it was redesigned by an Army specialist, a woman, Elizabeth Will, I believe her name was, and it was designed with a purple heart on the metal bordered by gold and suspended from a purple and white ribbon as we recognize today. And at that time, in 1932, it was only for the Army, people that were part of the Army. And then in 1942, President Roosevelt expanded it to all the branches of the military for all the personnel. And then in 1962, President John F. Kennedy authorized it as a posthumous award. And then finally, one of the most significant other things that happened through its history was in 1984, President Reagan authorized it as an award as a result of terrorist attacks, and also removed civilian personnel from those from the list that could be eligible. So that is what we have today. And the Purple Order of, I'm sorry, the Military Order of the Purple Heart was chartered by Congress in 1958, and these are folks that have received the award, and they can join the order. And because some join and some do not, the number of recipients is not specifically known. And another thing that's happened is during wartime, sometimes the headquarters where the records are kept are destroyed. So we don't really know how many recipients we've had in our country, but the estimate is 1.7 million. And the Military Order of the Purple Heart in Alaska currently has about 300 members, and DMV is issued, in case you're interested, 716 Purple Heart license plates. So we all know, we've heard many times, members of this committee, that we have a higher per capita rate of veterans in our state. So we're going to assume that there are a number of unidentified Purple Heart recipients in addition to those 300 who are members of the order. Now,
excuse me, Representative.
Yes.
I just want the record to reflect that Representative Sadler has joined us. Proceed.
We would be in the early batch. You know, sometimes we decide to do things after 40 or more states have done things. In this case, we would be one of the early states deciding to become a Purple Heart state because there have only been four others that have done it. And there are 48 cities across the nation that have become Purple Heart cities. And I'm happy to say Wasilla was the first city in Alaska with Palmer following, so just have to brag a little bit about that. And there's only one, there are 22 counties that have become Purple Heart counties, only one borough, and I'll brag again, that happens to be the Mat-Su borough. So I think it is time for Alaska to join the ranks of those other few states. And passed out there at your seat, you'll see a stamp, was in 2003. The Postal Service issued the Purple Heart stamp, and so we thought we would like to give you that little token. And again, I'll wrap up by saying, as the home state to a number of Purple Heart recipients, those heroes who have valiantly served us and ensured our ongoing freedoms, I believe it is fitting to declare Alaska Purple Heart State, and I ask you for the support for this resolution. But before I close out, I'd like to conclude with a story which my legislative aide, Virginia Smiley, will tell. She's actually the daughter of a Purple Heart recipient. So here you go, Virginia.
Can you just identify yourself for the record, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Virginia Smiley, and I am staff to Representative Hughes. So on June 6, 1944, my father landed at Utah Beach in France. He was part of the 4th Infantry Division. He spent that first night on the beach with an 18-year-old soldier from Ohio who had lost his weapon in the landing. And my father fought throughout France over the months and later took a vicious wound that took most of the tricep of his right arm and about 40% of the bicep of his right arm. So he ended up back in the United States in lengthy rehabilitation. But he never considered himself disabled. And over time, he would learn to play baseball, bowl, and eat with his left arm and hand. And later when we would talk with him about the war, and he was able to go back for the 40th and 50th anniversaries of D-Day, went back to France, and was able to sleep in feather beds in the homes of descendants whose barns that he had slept in when he served in France. And when he would reflect on the war, we would ask him, oh, gee, you know, that was a terrible wound. And he never really talked about his wound, but he would always say, I wonder what happened to that 18-year-old kid from Ohio that I spent the first night on the beach with on Utah Beach. And at the time, my father had just turned 20. So his is just one story, and it's just the memory. It's a memory for him. It's a memory for us. And with this resolution, we just want to honor all soldiers like him who were wounded in contact, and we just want to give them the recognition, and we want Alaska to be the largest Purple Heart state. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. To the sponsor, I guess, would the... There's a number of memorial designations, and it's in the military, the ceremonial is important. Would there be any opportunity to leverage the Purple Heart state status into encouraging more wounded combat veterans to make sure that they have signed up for the full range of benefits offered to them by the federal VA? Would this be a good tool to help build that awareness?
I believe there's potential there. We do have Verdi Bowen on the phone who might be able to answer that. What is Verdi's title? Virginia?
I don't believe Verdi is on the phone, but we do have Tim Armstrong in the room, who is a service officer with the Military Order of the Purple Heart.
And we also have Hugh
McHugh.
Pierre. Pierre. So would one or the other of you like to come up and answer that question if you know the answer to it?
I'd be happy to. Madam Chair, thank you very much. For the record, I'm McHugh Pierre, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And this is a special privilege right here, sitting next to Representative Hughes. Through the Chair, Representative Sadler, we are absolutely going to use this as an opportunity to build awareness for veterans to sign up for health care benefits with the VA. It's critical, and as Representative Hughes knows, through her husband's service and her son's service, we need all the veterans in the state to sign up. If the veterans sign up in mass, then the VA will dramatically increase their health care and dramatically increase the full range of services that are provided to veterans in the state. And this will be just one of the opportunities that we use to promote awareness and increase services for veterans.
Thank you.
And a follow-up observation, I guess, not so much as a question. I do see a zero. Thank you, Madam Chair. I do see the zero fiscal note, but also know that there is additional positive benefit that can come to the state. I'm pleased to see this kind of effort to do just what you said, to bring more benefits, more money into the state, more care for the veterans who have earned it. So, thank you.
Any other questions from anybody on the committee? Well, then I'd now like to open public testimony, and I think we have several people who are online. To begin with, we have from Anchorage, we have Johnny L. White. Mr. White, can you identify yourself for the record, and can you tell us what, if any, organization you're testifying on behalf of?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Johnny White. I am currently here in Anchorage. I am testifying on behalf of the HRC Bureau 2 for the Purple Heart to be in Alaskan State.
Proceed.
Yes, I would just want to say that I earned my Purple Heart in 2005 while I was serving in the Army with the 82nd Airborne in Iraq for a campaign IAF-3. To give you a brief rundown of the mission, we were supposed to go there and stop the flow of insurgents coming in from different countries into Iraq that were hastening the war and making the war more difficult for us to fight. And in our deployment, we actually lost, while we were attached to the Marines, 34 Marines in one fight. We didn't have an easy fight. It was a hard fight, and it was challenging for all of the troopers, including myself. I was wounded on November 19th, and I didn't wake up until December 20th. The first person I saw was a World War II veteran that was helping us and talking to us and thanking us, and he was a Purple Heart winner. I'll never forget that. We're on the hospital and coming home. You get your assistance from the military, and you get your assistance from your friends and family, but the one group that always stood by us was the Purple Heart Foundation. I finally received my Purple Heart in March of 2012, and I was wounded in 2005. It was only because of the Purple Heart Foundation that I was able to receive my Purple Heart and get the help and benefits that I do. To benefit the state of Alaska, to be a Purple Heart state, every veteran I know in this state would greatly appreciate it, and it would help get more assistance and stabilize veterans that need assistance if they had this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. White? Thank you, Mr. White. Next, we
Thank
have
you.
Online from Bethel is Henry Hunter. Mr. Hunter, will you identify yourself for the record and tell us whether you're testifying on behalf of yourself or any particular organization?
Yeah, thank you. This is Henry Hunter, Sr. in Bethel. I would like to support this House Concurrent Resolution Number 2, recognizing Alaska as a Purple Heart state. I received my Purple Heart in 1971 with the 101st Airborne Division in Vietnam. And before that, my neighbor, George Kilbuck, he was the first person that was KIA that came from Bethel, died in Vietnam, and he also did receive the Purple Heart. And I hope that, you know, the state of Alaska recognized all those veterans who received the Purple Heart, and I really support this because Earlier there was mention of benefits being paid to veterans who apply for VA. I'm also in the VA system. I don't fully receive my benefits. I'm still waiting to receive full benefits from the VA, and with Alaska being a Purple Heart state, I hope that it will move the wheels faster to give these benefits to all Alaskans. Outside of Bethel, there are 56 villages, and I know there are a lot of veterans. I don't know if there are Purple Heart recipients there, but I know the Veterans of Foreign Wars service officer comes to Bethel and try to help these veterans. But I hope that by passing this resolution that you would pass to help those Purple Heart recipients. And it was never my intention to receive a Purple Heart when the United States government told me to enlist and fight in Vietnam. At that time it was President Kennedy when he said those famous words, and it inspired me and other youth to help our country, and there were no questions asked. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hunter. Any questions for Mr. Hunter?
I'm gonna make a comment.
Representative
Just thank you so much for your service. It really was an honor to hear your story today.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So thank you very much, Mr. Hunter. The next online, and this is from the Fairbanks LIO, is Francis Boisseau. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. Mr. Boisseau, would you please identify yourself for the record and tell us if you're testifying on behalf of any organization?
My name is Francis G. Boisseau, and I'm going to be testifying on my own because I don't have permission from the other organizations to testify on their behalf. I'm a 40-year Alaskan living here in Fairbanks, brought up by Uncle Sam in 1973, retired out of the Army in 1973. I served 3 tours in Vietnam, was wounded in August 1967, was flying gunship in support of an extraction helicopter in western Vietnam. My background, again, like I said, is 23 years with the Army, 7 years as a grunt, and 16 years as a pilot, on to retire, and then I flew for 25 years as a civilian helicopter pilot. I took a year off, retired, and my wife says, go back to work. Here in the interior, we had one service officer providing the services north of the range, and that service officer was doing the same work that 13 service officers were doing in the south of the range. So the military of Purple Heart said, Francis, you find an office in Fairbanks, and we'll hire you. So I've been a National Service Officer of the military of Purple Heart now for 5 years. I belong to 8 service organizations, such as Disabled American Veterans, Veterans of Foreign Wars, American Legions, Vietnam Helicopter Pilots Association, Special Forces Association, on and on and on. We have 4 military of Purple Heart chapters in our state, and in Fairbanks it's 675, and we have approximately 75 members. One of the accomplishments made by the Alaska chapters and department of the military of the Purple Heart was one. We have Purple Heart Lane down the Veterans Memorial down in the Parks Highway. We have the Purple Heart Trail, which runs from the border to Fairbanks, and that was mostly run-added by Ron Seabolt at that time, who was our department commander. And he received, in establishing the Purple Heart Trail, great support from the state. I'm going to give you some statistics, and you probably all know them, but I'm going to go over them In Vietnam, we had 58,309, and this is as of 1975, that died in that war. We had 300,000 were wounded. In the Iraq and Afghanistan conflict ongoing, we had 6,280 people died, or service members died. 41,936 were wounded. That's from 2001 to present. And we were involved between 1955 and 1999, 17 other conflicts in which soldiers and military personnel gave their lives. A grand total from 1775 to present is 2,722,991 that were wounded and died. I think Alaska becoming a Purple Heart state would be an honor for every person who's ever served in our military, and an honor for every relative of those who stayed, or those who served. So I ask you, please, don't let this opportunity go by.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boisseau. I think Representative Reinbold has a question for you.
Hi, Francis. This is Representative Reinbold, and I'm sure I could probably speak on behalf of everybody here. First of all, it's an honor again. I cannot believe that you served three times at Vietnam. I briefly went over and saw the Coochie Tunnels and got just a tiny little reflection of what you must have undergone when you were over in Vietnam. And I wanted to just say I hope that you celebrate deeply. We just passed the Vietnam Vets Day. So that you'll be able to celebrate. I just want to apologize on behalf of why this took 40 years. I have no idea. But we just want to say thank you and for your service and for sharing your very touching testimony with us.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Any further questions or comments? Well, I'm going to double that from Representative Reinbold. We've got also from the MATSU, Kenneth Ross. Mr. Ross, can you identify yourself for the record and tell us on behalf of whom you're testifying?
Yeah, hi, I'm Kenneth Bill Ross, and I'm a member of the Military Order of the Purple Heart and also the Marine Corps League and the Vietnam Veterans of America. That's my representation, and I want to thank the Senator Hughes for her participation in this and everybody there. I'm doing all the footwork right now throughout the MATSU borough. I got a meeting next week at Talkeetna with council up there to become Purple Heart City there. That'll put five cities just in this locale from Palmer, Wasilla, Palmer, Houston, and Talkeetna and the MATSU borough. Being an old grunt, I'm Vietnam vet. I was combat wounded in November of 68 during the basically the tail end of Tet era. I was classified a walking wounded. Back then, if you could walk and still pick up a rifle, you went to work. Other than that, you were medevaced out and brought back to the States. But I've been doing the legwork on this, and I'm appreciated to the mayor of Wasilla and his council, just for all of us that served in the military, both physically and mentally, and combat wounded, and the deceased. As you know, we had the wall, Vietnam wall, in town this last Flag Day, and that's when everything started really coming to an end. And when Ron Siegel told me that we would be number five, I actually tried for number four before North Carolina to become a state, but just didn't get in there in time. But being the fifth Purple Heart state would help the Veterans Administration bring in a lot more men and women that are living in the bush right now in our state to get their medical benefits and get them back into enjoying the life with their neighbors and families and everybody they knew and grew up with, if you know what I mean. And I appreciate what the legislative is doing on this, and I'm hoping it passes, and I will be the first one there to welcome it, let's say, along with everybody else. That's pretty much all I got to say about it. I'm for it.
Thank you, Mr. Ross, and thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your service, and Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a brief question for you, Mr. Ross. You mentioned you're with the MOPH. Are you officially representing that organization's position, or are you speaking as an individual?
I'm doing both. I'm both a member, and I'm actually a National Service Officer rep, and rep for the Marine Corps League, and rep for the VBA. So, but I am belong to the chapter here in town. I am the commander, but I'm speaking as commander and as individual.
Glad to hear that. Thank you, Mr. Ross.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Ross? Well, then thank you for your testimony, Mr. Ross.
So
I think that ends the LIO testimony. I think we have a couple of people here in the audience who would like to testify. First person I've got is Paul Beams. Could you come up here and identify yourself for the record?
I'm on the telephone.
Oh, okay.
My name is Paul Beals. I enlisted in the Navy in 1965 to be a Navy hospital corpsman. I served with the Seabees and Marines in Vietnam during 67, 68, and 69. I was there for a total of 2 years. We were a generation of warriors, the sons and daughters of those heroes that stopped Hitler's insanity in Europe and Japanese aggression in the Pacific, and it was our obligation and our rite of passage to serve. It was unfortunate, I think, that we had to serve in Vietnam, because many of us weren't believing in God and country, and we came home to a country at war with itself over what we had done. It was a very long time for me before I would do anything to identify myself as a Vietnam veteran. I was wounded in 1967 when an ammunition dump blew up in Dong Ha. I was at Kaesong during TET, and during the 2 years that I was in Vietnam, I held a lot of boys as they died. And I, not too many years ago, got a Purple Heart license plate and put it on my vehicle. Not to identify myself as a veteran as much as for all those boys. I went to graduate school at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and my graduate thesis was an analysis of 43 hours of conversations with Alaska Native Vietnam combat vets. And for them, of course there was still a draft, for them it was a generation who went to war in one community. Out on the coast, there were a community of about 150 people. There were 8 young men who went to Vietnam, and there are 2 left. Those who weren't killed in Vietnam have either died because of self-medicating from the post-traumatic stress that they suffered, or by suicide. For the last few years, I've worked in suicide prevention, intervention, and postvention as a licensed professional counselor. And as I'm sure most of you know, Alaska has one of, if not the highest rate of suicide in the nation. And I think those folks who live in isolation are most vulnerable. Even that isolation that occurs in cities. And so many veterans still are isolated, have not identified themselves, and I believe it's helping that recognition that that may bring them out of that isolation. When the Army came out with a license, the bumper sticker that said "Be an Army of One," the first time I saw one of those, I wanted to get another bumper sticker that said, "And if you think that's lonely, wait until you're a veteran." Back when I was doing my research for my thesis, I heard a representative, a national representative of the Veterans Administration, in reference to those guys who live in Village, Alaska, said, well, if they have trouble getting benefits from the VA, why don't they move into town? We didn't tell them to live out there. Yet the letters that started greetings from the President of the United States, those letters that announced their draft, found them in those villages. I think it's safe to say that things have improved somewhat since that comment, but there's still a lot of room for improvement. And I believe that this recognition, this raising of consciousness of our society, of our culture, of everybody in this state, will help. And I support it unequivocally. You know, I could rant for hours, but I'll be quiet and ask if there are any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Beal?
I've got a comment.
Go ahead, Representative Reinbold.
You know, I can't help myself just to say thank you. This was an absolutely heart-wrenching testimony. And I hope that, with all my heart, that you get as many Vietnam vets to celebrate on March 29th and also make it even a more special celebration. Hopefully you'll have like a Purple Heart cake this March 29th. If this bill passes, hopefully it will soon. But most importantly right now, I want to say thank you for passing it on. Thank you for helping others. It's a core, we're all concerned here and about our suicide rate in the state, and for you doing that hard frontline work with one of the most impactful people that served this nation, thank you so much. Please pass it on, and thanks also for your passion in regards to this bill.
Any further questions or comments for Mr. Beams? Mr. Beams, just one question for you. Were you testifying on behalf of yourself or as a member of the Order of Purple Heart?
Well, although I am a life member of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, I guess I'm speaking just for myself and for those guys who died in my arms and those who live in the villages.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for your service and thank you for your testimony. We also have Verdi Brown, I believe, online, the Director of Veterans Affairs, and I don't know whether you want to testify, Mr. Brown, or were there just for questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Verdi Bowen. I'm the Director of Veterans Affairs. Actually, McHugh Pierre is representing Veterans Affairs for today.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Bowen.
I have a question for
you. Go ahead, Representative Higgins.
Good afternoon. This is Representative Higgins. I'm an 11-year military person myself, and I appreciate Representative bringing this forth for all of us to come forth. But, you know, being a military guy, I guess my heartache is with the veterans, is with our government not producing what they promised us, and we continue to see our funds dwindle. So do you think that this resolution will help in that matter?
Through the chair to Representative Higgins, yes, I do. The biggest problem that we have with veterans across our nation is the fact that they're invisible. Most people don't recognize that they're veterans simply by the fact that veterans generally don't have a political party, a sex, a religion, or any of those other things. So they generally come back, get out of the service, go back into our communities, and they're really hard to be seen. And when we start producing things like Purple Heart State, Purple Heart Day, and Memorial Day events and things like that, it actually brings those veterans back out from their homes and from their places of employment and brings them back out into the community where people will see that they've served. I don't think a week goes by where we don't discover from someone that they're a veteran, only to discover their family never knew. So this is just another good way to help us reach those veterans that are silent about their service.
And that within hopes that we can get our government to start paying for the benefits that they promised us. Thank you.
That's correct.
Further questions? Is there anybody from the audience that would like to testify? Please come to the front and identify yourself.
Good afternoon. I hope you'll excuse my lack of protocol for the demeanor. I'm Tim Armstrong. I am appearing today on behalf of the Department of Alaska Military Order of the Purple Heart. I serve at the discretion of the department commander as Chief of Staff for Southeast District. The Military Order of the Purple Heart is a congressionally chartered veterans organization. It differs slightly from the others as it is comprised 100% of combat veterans who sustained injuries directly resulting from hostile action in a theater of war. Every soldier, sailor, marine, airman, or Coast Guardsman wounded or killed in a theater of war qualifies for the Purple Heart Award. Many were awarded the medal posthumously. I number among the lucky survivors. Our organization is, in fact, a support mechanism for our valuable service officer work, which extends across the nation, aiding veterans in obtaining the benefits and medical attention they earned in defense of our great nation. Sometimes the procedures and qualifications for obtaining veterans' benefits can overwhelm an individual. Therefore, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, at no cost to the veteran, provides assistance, guidance, and often legal representation in Vietnam dealing with the Veterans Administration. You've heard it said many times that Alaska has the highest per capita ratio of veterans to population than any other state in the Union, and this is true. Veterans contribute heavily to the overall health and economy of our growing state, and in like, Alaska has always distinguished itself in being a state that recognizes the value of those contributions and the people that made them. This was very apparent when Alaska was one of the first states to award high school diplomas to veterans who interrupted their education to leave home and fight in World War II. I was personally present when Governor Tony Knowles, himself a veteran, awarded diplomas to three Juneau veterans who served in the Alaska Territorial Guard. I attended ceremonies in Delta Junction when the stretch of road from Tok to Fairbanks was dedicated as the Purple Heart Highway. Veterans like myself were gratified in 2009 to have Governor Sarah Palin officially proclaim August the 7th as Purple Heart Day in Alaska, and later to have Governor Sean Parnell proclaim it a reoccurring holiday. Along with our designated state bird, the willow ptarmigan, the Sitka spruce is our state tree, the Alaska Malamute our state dog, and our motto, North to the Future, and our state flower, the forget-me-not, I believe you will find overwhelming support for officially adding yet another prominent distinction as Alaska, a Purple Heart state. I thank you for allowing me the opportunity to stand in support of that effort today. And for those that might require a visual of the Purple Heart Award, I was asked to bring my personal award here today to display it for those that may not be familiar with the actual appearance of the Purple Heart Medal. And this is, in fact, the medal that was issued to me in as a result of wounds received on November 23rd of 1968 in Three Corps Vietnam. I served with the 1st Air Mobile Cavalry Division as an infantry machine gunner. And this particular medal, ladies and gentlemen, is identical to every other medal with one exception. It has my name engraved on the back. And I'm extremely proud to say that it was this very medal that was utilized to craft all of the highway signs that now designate the Purple Heart Trail extending from Tok to Fairbanks. And as a result of that, the Alaska Department of Transportation gifted me with a highway sign, a portion of that Purple Heart sign that you see all along the highway up there, which I now have at home prominently displayed in my home office. And if you've ever tried to check an Alaska highway sign on an airplane as a hand carry, I'll tell you, it's not the easiest thing to do, but I did do that back when the Purple Heart Highway was designated in Delta Junction a few years back. But I thank you for your time. Thank you for allowing me to stand in support of your effort here today, and I certainly hope it's a positive outcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Representative Reinbold?
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for serving. It's an honor to have a Vietnam vet in the room with us. Thank you for sharing the honor, and congratulations on the sign. I'm going to make every effort to drive by and get a picture of one of those, and I hope you'll stay around and allow some of us to get pictures with you.
You betcha.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Further questions? Well, thank you for your service, and thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? All right, then I'm going to close public testimony. And is there any discussion from the committee?
Yes.
Representative Hughes?
Yes, thank you, Chairwoman Ledoux. And I Representative Reinbold was doing individual thanks, and I didn't want to be repetitive, but I would be remiss if I didn't thank all those who testified. And all of those who came to me in this last year expressing interest and hope in this effort, I just want to thank all of you. Your stories and your service is overwhelming, and we have great gratitude for you. And this is only one small thing that we can do, but we do hope that it will give you a bit of our appreciation. Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I haven't said anything before because I figured I'd save it for now. I appreciate everybody who's testified on this bill. I co-sponsored it. I, too, was over in Vietnam. I was on an LST. I was a gunnery officer on a landing ship, big one. And one of my friends was in the Marine Corps, and during the Tet Offensive, he received a, fortunately, it was only a very minor wound, but he has a Purple Heart, and he has a Purple Heart license plate on one of his cars in Southern California. So this is for you, Joe.
Further questions or comments? Well, seeing none, then I would entertain a motion to move the bill.
So moved.
Do you want to
read the whole thing?
Yes, why don't you?
Okay, can I have a bill number? Sorry. Okay. I'd like to make a motion to move House Bill, the Purple Heart State, version 28-LS-0287, /A, out of committee with attached fiscal note and recommendations.
Well, seeing no objections, the bill is moved from committee. The next item on the agenda is House Bill number 59, Missing Vulnerable Adult Response Plan.
How do you distribute your stuff? And if you could distribute that too, please.
And here to speak about that bill is Representative Grunberg and his staff, Miles Brooks. So, Representative Grunberg, would you begin by identifying yourself for the record?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Max Grunberg. I represent House District 14, which is the Boniface area and Russian Jack in north central Anchorage. And it's my pleasure to introduce House Bill 59. And this is a bill that Genesis was last session. At the time, it was Senate Bill 179 by Senator Davis and a number of senators and several of us representatives. And the bill will create a new system to help in finding missing vulnerable adults. The system would be conducted similar to the Amber Alert system, which is used to locate missing or abducted children. The bill, Senate Bill 179, passed the Senate unanimously and passed through two committees of the House unanimously and went to rules, but it didn't make it onto the floor the last day of the session. Currently, 29 states either have an alert system geared towards vulnerable seniors or vulnerable adults, and in your bill packet, which you should have, there is a handout that lists all of these. And the plan is important for Alaska and for vulnerable adults and their families. As you know, there are a lot of dangers across the state due to the weather and the geography. And if we don't have a way of notifying folks that people are out there who are vulnerable, then we could lose some folks out there. And the definition, first of all, Madam Chair, before I really go a lot further, we have the bill itself, the A version, which was introduced, but the bill I'd like to have the committee deal with is a CS, and it's the N version. And I'm wondering, you should have that in your packet there. There's both the A version and the proposed CS. Got it. Okay. Good. And what I'm wondering,
then one moment, Mr. Bloomberg, can I have a motion to adopt the CS for purposes of discussion?
Wait, I just want to clarify. I'll be happy to make it. But is it the LS 260 version N that we're adopting? Okay. I'd like to make a motion to adopt 28-LS0260/N.
For purposes of discussion.
Yeah, for purposes of discussion.
Seeing no objection, we'll continue looking at with that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. If the members would look at the last page in the N version, it defines vulnerable adult by referencing AS 4724-900, and we have transmitted to you just a minute ago a copy of that statute, and the statute is what subsection is that in the statute?
It's in subsection 21.
Subsection 21 defines vulnerable adult, and that's mentioned up at the top of the definition is a person 18 years of age or older who, because of incapacity, mental illness, mental deficiency, physical illness, or disability, advanced age, chronic use of drugs, chronic intoxication, fraud, confinement, or disappearance, is unable to meet the person's own needs or to seek help without assistance. And it says disappearance. In fact, we didn't say a definition of missing vulnerable adult, because everywhere it appears in the bill, it's clear the vulnerable adult must be missing, because if it wasn't missing, you wouldn't need the silver alert. The purpose is to find the missing person. And under the bill, and the meat of the bill, Madam Chair, is on page 2, section 2. It's a new section, and it requires the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to cooperate with the Department of Public Safety to use statewide and local radio and television broadcasts, newspapers, and other communication media, develop and implement missing vulnerable adult prompt response and notification plans for use by law enforcement agencies, groups, and persons, that's anybody, to locate a vulnerable adult who's missing and to coordinate the use of those plans. And there are several things that must be included in the plan. Standards to determine when it's appropriate to implement a plan, and standards under that paragraph, the appropriateness determination, must address when a vulnerable adult will be considered missing, and the format, content, and distribution of reports prepared by participating law enforcement agencies and others searching for a missing vulnerable adult. Also, the plan must to determine where to implement the plan, and also the voluntary participation in the plan by radio and television broadcasters, newspaper publishers, and others, and owners and operators of other communication media. And then subparagraph B is a tort immunity for radio, television broadcasters, publishers, and owners and operators of other communication media. That's basically what the bill does. And I'll have a one-word technical amendment. I don't know, have you distributed that? Yeah. I'll deal with that separately because part of it's wrong. And all I want to do is have one word added to this. But I believe, Miles, yes, you should have letters in there that and some testimony. It's supported by the Alaska AARP chapter, the Alaska Commission on Aging, the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, the Alaska Peace Officers Association, and letters of support can be found in the bill packet. There's also a letter in there from Department of Health and Social Services that is supportive of the bill. We have a fiscal note from the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Military. I don't see that in here. Is that in here? There is. Okay.
Representative Hughes, because I'm not seeing my fiscal note either.
Wait a minute, I just found it.
It's after the bill. It's after the original bill.
I only found a fiscal note from Department of Public Safety. What is this?
Yeah.
Where's that?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you folks have in there the fiscal note from McHugh Pierre? Is that in there in your packets?
No.
Okay, maybe we can make a copy of that for everybody. Be happy to answer any questions.
There are any questions for the sponsor of the bill? Representative Reinbold.
I had one question, and it probably was more of a word that caught my attention. When you read the vulnerable adult and the meaning given in AS 47-24.900, can you reread that just one more time, the definition
of
vulnerable?
You have the statute. Miles should have distributed the statute.
Oh, here it is. Okay, I didn't see this. Okay, the word fraud, I just that one caught my eye. If you could just elaborate on that.
Sure. The word fraud was added to a number of statutes, including on vulnerable adults, last year as a result of, I believe, House Bill 150, which was a major governor's bill that beefed up the protection for vulnerable adults who are the victims of generally what's called elder fraud. People come in and they take their property and that sort of thing. And there's a whole section of attorneys, and I'm not sure if it's in the Department of Health and Social Services or in the AG's office. Actually, I'm sorry, it's in the Office of Public Advocacy that deals with this. And we really beefed up the laws and added fraud throughout wherever the vulnerable adult concept is there. And I suppose it would be unlikely that would be the triggering event here, unless I can consider a situation where somebody is the victim and then confronts the perpetrator and the victim goes missing, you know. Mm-hmm. So you may have something like that, but this was just conforming because of House Bill, I think it's 150.
Thank you.
We had a committee, we worked a lot on that in the judiciary. I chaired the subcommittee. It's a really good bill, if I may say.
Any other questions for Representative Grunberg? Representative Higgins.
Through the chair. On your amendments that you want to do, page 2, line 16, you want to delete determining?
No. If I may, Madam Chair, Representative Higgins.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I, as usual, my style is I'm always looking to make certain that the bill doesn't have any goof up in it.
Okay.
And so I just did this a few minutes ago, and I misread the bill. And so the word determining should remain in.
Okay.
And the only, if the members could kindly
throw this away,
delete that. And the only thing I would like to do is to do the second part of that. After the word, after the figure three, put in the word the.
The voluntary participation.
You're right. Good catch. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, well, when after we're finished with public testimony, et cetera, we can make the formal amendments. I've got a question for Representative Grunberg and then Representative Hughes. Representative Grunberg?
Yes, ma'am.
Does either the Department of Military or Veterans Affairs or the Department of Public Safety, I mean, I don't notice any letters of support from those entities, and I'm seeing that Rodney Dial from the Alaska State Troopers, it looks like he's going to be on the line to answer any questions. But I mean, is the administration for it, against it, or neutral on it?
I have a practice. I never carry messages. I would ask you please to ask them, because I don't want to paraphrase what they will say. And this is just, I did this in the practice of law, and I do it here. I would rather have you hear it from the people there, if that's okay.
Do you have anybody available? I see McHugh, but I don't see, do you have a representative who is able to testify as to the position of the Department of Public Safety? Is that Lieutenant Dial?
I think he will say yes.
Okay.
And I think they will repeat what they've got in their stuff, but please don't rely on what I think.
Okay. Then I guess Representative Hughes.
Yes, I did have a question, and my question stems from the fact that I do not know very much about the Amber Alert system, which I believe is just for children. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And we do have it in Alaska. So my question is there some, are we creating a parallel system? Is there any way that we can just expand the Amber Alert system that would be, it would be more, I noticed this, the fiscal notes are zero, but it is going to involve more work. And I'm just wondering why we're creating, you're suggesting that a different system be created.
The Amber Alert does not have a statutory base. They've just done it. And so this, for the first time, we're putting this in statute. And the feeling has been, and I'll ask the two witnesses from law, from public safety and military and veterans affairs to give you the full story on this. But basically, they did not want to do anything with the Amber Alert in this. I said, well, should we just do one combined bill? And they said, no, let's leave the Amber Alert the way it is. This will mesh with the Amber Alert. And in the cities, they can do this without having a statute. And this is going to help make sure that this is done statewide.
Representative Hughes.
Thank you. So the Amber Alert is done in the city, and it's not in statute, and the agencies are doing it. Are they currently doing it for vulnerable adults at this point on a voluntary basis, or it's not happening at all?
I don't know if it's not happening at all. It's not happening regularly like they do with children. You know, you can pick up your phone and there'll be a recording that there's a missing child in your area. I don't know if they do that out where in Palmer, but they certainly do it in downtown, in Anchorage, where we live. And it's our intent it would be the same kind of a thing. And on broadcast, you know, they like can broadcast messages and stuff.
Representative Hughes.
And the Amber Alert, correct me if I'm wrong, it's for children, and it's just done by cities. And I'm curious why you chose to go with the silver Amber Alert that maybe isn't happening so regularly, or maybe that's why you're doing it, trying to get in statute. And the Amber Alert, do we have a sense that also needs to be in statute so it happens statewide, or is it being successful the way it is right now?
The department, I want the department to answer that directly. But I was told that it's successful the way it is, But this will make sure that the silver alert is done, and we'll have publicity. And frankly, sometimes passing a statute helps and makes sure that these plans are implemented. That's our goal.
Representative Reinbold.
Okay, so what my question is about how many people do you think this is going to impact? How many go missing? And I guess the reason I'm asking is I'm a bit of a skeptic on this fiscal note. And so, you know, with the zero, as Representative Hughes just said, it seems like this is going to be extra work. And so what I want to ask you is if the regulations are written, let's say this bill passes, if regulations are written in and it ends up costing money, if you will come back and report to us.
And the question was, should they do that?
What I'm asking you, if the bill passes, regulations are written, and for some reason there ends up a fiscal note, you know, after the fact, if you will come back and report to this committee.
That would be up. I certainly have no problem with making that the intent. They wouldn't report it to me. They could report. The department would normally report directly to the legislature.
Okay.
I'm happy to do that, but normally if there's a fiscal impact, if it's enough to warrant an additional appropriation, they'll seek it either in the next regular appropriation or if it's an emergency in a supplemental.
But you're not anticipating that?
The departments are not, no.
Thank you.
But I, again, please ask them. I don't like to answer for somebody else. And you were asking how many people are to be affected. If the members would look at the February 25 letter from the Department of Health and Social Services, Commission on Aging, you would see at least to some extent, second paragraph. According to the Alzheimer's Association in 2011, nearly 60% of people with Alzheimer's wander at some point during the course of their disease. If not found within a 24-hour period, up to one-half of those wanderings may result in personal injury or death. And obviously in Alaska that could be fatal. The figures I don't see in here. I'm sure we could get them if you wish.
Representative Hughes.
Yes, and I do appreciate that. My mother-in-law has passed away, but she had Alzheimer's, and when she came up from Charleston, South Carolina to visit, she hadn't been in her home for more than an hour, where she kept trying to walk out the door to go back home, and it was in the, you know, dark and in the winter, so I appreciate that. This came to this committee, Military and Veterans Affairs, so I'm wondering if you have any numbers on the obviously there must be some impact on veterans and no?
No.
So why was it assigned to this committee? I'm
okay.
Curious.
Again, I will ask Mr. Pierre to give you the details. The reason it did is because the communications system is under Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. They have been involved, Mr. O'Hare, Mike O'Hare, has been involved. And is he one of the people on the line, too? Okay. Well, McHugh Pierre will discuss that. But this whole thing is through this communication system. And it's really comes and emanates from the emergency management function of the department. The department deals with the National Guard, and it deals with emergency management disasters and stuff. There's some interlocking in interest there, but some things that don't directly affect the Guard in this case, but do affect the communications.
Representative Hughes.
Yes, and I actually went through that thought process earlier today, so there must be just a little bit of a gap there. But I guess it was when the reason why I got triggered again, even though I knew that it was between the two departments, is when reading the definition of a vulnerable adult, it did make me think of some veterans. So I do, even though it wasn't brought to that committee for this that reason, I would think that it might impact some veterans, and I don't know if you have any sense of that, of the kind of numbers that could possibly fall in that category.
No, I have never, if I may, no, I through the chair, I have never broken it out in my mind to that. Once again, I would ask you to ask the folks from the administration. But it's something that hopefully will save some lives. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Grunberg. Could I ask McHugh Pierre to come up and to testify as to whether this has the support of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs?
For the record, my name is McHugh Pierre, Madam Chair, Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and I'd also like to refer to you to Trooper Dial, who is also on the line, because DPS is a critical piece of this. Certainly the way the legislation reads, we're instructed to partner with DPS to accomplish this mission. We do that with Amber Alert currently, and that's why that's not in this piece of legislation. We feel that it works out very well, and we don't want to tinker with it. We want to let it be. We want the flexibility to allow it to be. The reason why this legislation is being proposed is because there is a group in our community, in our state, and across the nation that wants to make sure that those folks that are adults, that might be elderly, that are vulnerable, in a vast number of definitions of that word, vulnerable, are protected and made sure they are watched out for. So in that manner, we have a system that exists for emergency communications to send out our message, whether it's for tsunamis, amber alerts, or any other type of natural disaster or widespread communication that we need to make to the public. We will, in the time of the event that warrants response to the silver alert proposal that you have before you, we will take action and use it in the same fashion. So we have no problems, and DPS is the one that's going to be doing the most of the work on this, so I won't speak on behalf of them, but we wrote a zero fiscal note on purpose. We know that this is not going to be any increased cost to us, and we feel comfortable with the way it's written.
Did you have a question, Representative Reinbold? Well, and then Representative Higgins.
If that's okay, I guess I'm having a hard time believing it's a zero fiscal note. I'll be honest with you, because I know I have a family member with Alzheimer's, and I mean, I don't know how big and wide and broad, you know, this is going to, but it seems impossible to be a zero fiscal note. So I guess I'm going to have to ask you as a department, if regs are written and it changes, I mean, I certainly think it was fair if we're passing this on the presumption it's a zero fiscal note and it ends up costing money, that you'd be honest with us and come back and let us know.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, if it costs money right now, I'd have a giant fiscal note for you. But the reality is that we don't do any of the response. So if there's a person who has Alzheimer's that wanders away from a home in a community, what is the level of local response to that? And as that level is escalated beyond the neighborhood, beyond the city, the silver alert will be triggered. So it starts with the local PD. It goes to the state troopers, then it goes to us to work with the state troopers to spread that message statewide. How often will that happen? I don't know. Hopefully never, Lord willing. Mm-hmm. But if it does happen, we'll know, we'll have the guidelines to take action on that.
Thank you.
Representative Higgins.
Well, let's go through those steps just for a second. You know, in Florida they have the silver alert, in other states they have it. And I know how it works down there. So the Veterans Military Affairs says that you guys are part of that communication process, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Higgins, that's correct.
What exactly do you guys do to communicate that out to the public?
So, through the chair, Representative Higgins, our process is this. It's twofold. So if there's time of an emergency or an amber alert or a silver alert, DPS or DMVA can activate the system and put a message into it. And all it takes is one person who puts in the message, and they put in whatever they're told. They literally type it in, or they speak it in, or they do both, and it's disseminated through the delivery
system. I understand that. But where does it go? How do I see that there's been an alert from the Military Affairs? What do you guys do that's going to let me know that you guys have communicated to me?
Anytime you see an EAS alert, emergency alert system on your TV, on your radio, you hear the famous sound, the bah, bah. I'm getting pretty good at that. They use my voice. No. So anytime you hear that, that's our broadcast. And we test that, and that's it.
I do. I have a fault. Well, and the reason why is because in Florida, that's not how they communicate.
Fair enough.
I mean, they've got these big signs over their highways. They put silver alerts. So when you drive by, you see it, you go, oh, yeah, look at that. And you read it. And you know, I mean, that's how they communicate to the masses. This is who's missing. Help us find this person. We don't have that here. Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Higgins, we have, and Trooper Dial can correct me, but I believe we have three of those signs in Alaska on the road system that are plugged into the system.
Not in Fairbanks, you don't.
I said we have three of the signs on the road system. So if you want to address the sign issue in Fairbanks, that's in the Finance Committee, I believe.
No, that's in the Fiscal Note Committee. That's my follow-up. That's my point.
No, that's false, Representative Higgins, through the chair. The Fiscal Note addresses the action prescribed by the legislation. It does not address future wishes or desires by the department. The language is very clear, and that will cost us no extra money. Now, if you would like us to do extra stuff in the future, that's for budget discussions. But as this is written, this is how it's going to be acted, and it's not going to cost us anything.
I'm good.
Any further questions for... go ahead. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to personally thank you and Mike for all the time and the effort you put in. The bill last year needed some extensive redrafting, and we've worked a lot with these gentlemen and their department. And I'm very grateful because I happen to think this is a good bill and it's going to help save some lives. I've said that before, but I just wanted to thank you on the record.
And Madam Chair, we appreciate being here to answer questions and support any bill that comes up in front of the committee. And I'd also like to encourage you to hear from Trooper Dial as well, because he is going to be doing the benefit of the work there.
He is next on the line.
Thank you.
And just for the record, usually, not always, but quite often, the Department of Public Safety is represented by Lieutenant Dial. He's
their
normal person.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. So thank you, McHugh. So do we have Lieutenant Rodney Dial on the line?
Yes, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with the Department of Public Safety. And I just want to say the department is neutral on House Bill 59. However, we do support the intent of the legislation. We have a few minor concerns, and I could certainly go through those with the committee or just be available for questions.
I'd like you to go through them for the committee, Lieutenant Dial.
Our main concern is the definition change regarding vulnerable adult that was accomplished by Senate Bill 86 in the 27th legislature. That change significantly increased the number of potential alerts that would be generated by this legislation by including those believed to be incapacitated by drugs or alcohol. We're concerned we may face a situation whereby a significant number of alerts in a community would discourage the voluntary participation of the media outlets and possibly have a desensitizing effect on the public that could reduce the effectiveness of the program. We also have concerns that because of the expansion of the definition of a vulnerable adult, some individuals, primarily those in a domestic situation, could abuse the alert system to track down or harass a victim of domestic violence who has fled the home and does not want their location known. Every year, law enforcement receives a number of calls by individuals reporting that their domestic partners are missing when, in reality, and sometimes they've just intentionally left and severed contact with the complainant. It's not uncommon in these situations for the reporter to claim that the individual is suicidal, suffering from mental distress, an abuser of drugs or alcohol, and requesting law enforcement to find them. We feel that we could address some of these concerns by simply stating that perhaps for the purposes of this section, the definition of a vulnerable adult could be what it was used in the past, which is essentially a person 18 years of age or older who, because of a physical or mental impairment, is unable to meet the person's own needs or seek help without assistance.
Excuse me, Lieutenant Dial, could you tell me whether that expanded definition of vulnerable adult, including intoxication and use of drugs, would expand the fiscal note?
Madam Chair, we don't believe so, because as we read this legislation, we see that the development of this plan could be as, it could essentially essentially just require us to maintain an email list, a fax list, a phone list, whereby if we had or when we received these reports, they would be disseminated to one of our regional dispatch centers. And our dispatch centers could make these notifications. So if we had, you know, this format in place, the actual amount of time it would take to transmit these notifications would, we believe, would be fairly minimal. So, you know, and we do have these 24-hour regional dispatch centers, and that is part of their job anyway. We currently process calls for missing persons regardless of this legislation. So the only real change here would be just a more of a requirement that we utilize some notification process to notify the media.
Thank you. Do you want to proceed, or had you finished?
I do want to say that the department takes all missing persons very seriously, and we certainly do support the intent of the legislation. We feel that if currently if media participation can help, we certainly use them. We do work closely with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and you know, stand ready to do anything we can to assist in this legislation and to help with the intent of this bill.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions for Lieutenant Dion? But before we go into those questions, I'm going to say that it would be my intent to hold this bill, let the sponsor of it address some of those questions that are brought up by Lieutenant Dion and any other questions, and we can bring the bill back at a further time. With that in mind, any further questions for Lieutenant Dion? Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lieutenant Dial, thanks for being with us today. If the chronic alcohol and drug, those who have that chronic use in the definition, if those weren't in the definition, would you be comfortable with it? Except I'm not sure how that would impact in the domestic violence kind of situation where someone flees the home. So I'm just wondering what the solution is, and maybe you have ideas for the sponsor, but I'm not sure how you'd tease that out, and just wonder if you have suggestions of how you could make it work.
Through the chair, we feel that the original definition that was addressed in the legislation last year is significant enough to encompass the folks that we want, but still give us the discretion in those cases where we suspect a domestic violence situation may be present, to have that flexibility so that we would not be pressed to make that notification. You know, there's certainly those situations. I've received a number of them myself over the years where something's just not right. You know, I'm getting a call and the guy's saying, you know, she left the house, and I'm really concerned, and I think she's suicidal, and she has drug and alcohol problems, and my experience in the community will, you know, trigger a memory where, you know, we've responded to this house for a domestic violence situation before, and generally before, you know, we'll activate search groups or those type of things, we'll, you know, try to contact friends or family and try to find out if we have a domestic situation. We just don't want to be you know, to not use a better word, but played by an individual that's trying to use us to basically harass or track down an individual in a domestic situation. The original definition of vulnerable adult, which said that a person 18 years of age or older who, because of a physical or mental impairment, is unable to meet the person's own needs or to seek help without assistance, to us, that, you know, that gives us the latitude to encompass those people that we feel should be in a silver alert, and then also enough flexibility to offer some protections if we have a domestic situation. Or also in those cases where we could have chronic inebriates, people who, you know, for example, you know, go on vendors, or you know, haven't shown up at the shelters, and they're not necessarily missing. It's just more of a kind of a standard practice for a couple of those individuals where, you know, we wouldn't want a few of them to generate a significant number of alerts in the community. We want to preserve that relationship that we have with media outlets so that when we do call and make that notification, they know it's a serious thing and they put that notification out for us. And I don't want to come across as being against this legislation in any way. We definitely support the intent, and, you know, finding people that are missing is, you know, one of our number one goals. So I just want to do what we can to try to make this better.
Representative Hughes, did you have a follow-up?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank you for your valuable perspective from the public safety, because we hadn't really thought of that before you offered your comments. And I do agree with you, desensitizing the public would have the opposite effect of what I believe the sponsor is trying to achieve here. And so appreciate your bringing these things to our attention, and I agree the bill needs some work. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg, did you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I did. Through the chair, Lieutenant Dial, you're suggesting that we use the definition that was in Senate Bill 179 from last legislature?
Through the chair, if we could use that definition in the confines of this statute, I think that would help us, because we wouldn't want to change the definition of what a vulnerable adult is, but we might could change the definition of what a vulnerable adult is regarding this legislation for in regards to what would require notification.
May I follow up, please?
Yes. Go ahead.
In fact, the definition in Senate Bill 179, the original bill, and the only CS of which I'm aware, which was the House State Affairs CS, used the identical definition we're using in this bill. And I quote, in this section, vulnerable adult has the meaning given in AS 47-24-900. It's the identical definition. There is no difference. Lieutenant Dial?
Through the chair, regarding the Senate version, we did address those concerns with the sponsor, and we were under the impression that a new version of that bill would be forthcoming that would address those concerns.
At any rate, Mr. Representative Grunberg, we're going to hold this bill over. I think it might be appropriate for you and Lieutenant Dayong to simply get together and try to iron out some of these problems, and then we can hear it again.
Okay.
With that in mind, does anybody else have any questions or comments? All right. Thank you very, very much for testifying, Lieutenant Dayong. Thank you, Mr. Grunberg, for bringing the bill to our attention.
Sure.
And we'll look forward to seeing it again when some of those questions and are resolved. The next item on the agenda is a presentation from the Mobility Coalition. So we have here David Levy, if you can come up. Well, I think you've already done so, and Mark Hickey, and introduce yourselves.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Levy, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Mobility Coalition, and we'll just take a minute to set up our presentation. We'll get started.
Madam Chair, for the record, Mark Hickey. I'm the contract lobbyist here in Juneau for Mobility Coalition.
And I'll also introduce shortly on the phone is Andy Nations, who is the our Veterans Transportation Project Consultant.
I am on the line. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll have it at ease until this gets straightened out.
Distinguished members of the legislature in this committee, ladies and gentlemen, my name is David Levy, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Mobility Coalition. I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak to the committee today. It was a pleasure to hear some of the other testimony earlier, and if I could, it's appreciate to hear the valiant stories that people provided earlier today. My father served during the Korean War, so I understand and respect the service that many of our members who spoke earlier talked about. What I'm going to be talking about today is two things. One is our, just to give you an update on our Veterans Transportation Project, and there are a couple of components about that. One is we have an an advisory board on veterans transportation, and then we'll also talk to you a little bit about a grant program that's associated with that. But first, if you go to the first slide, the Alaska Mobility Coalition is a private nonprofit membership organization. We have 128 members across the state, from Bethel to the north to Prince of Wales Island in the south and everything in between. We represent and advocate for public and community transportation across Alaska. We provide technical assistance and support to rural, private, public, and nonprofit transit systems around the state. Our members provide over 7 million rides annually for Alaskans to get to work, to school, and to medical appointments. And for more information on us, you can check out our website at www.alaskamobility.org. Next slide. I want to talk to you a little bit about how this project got started. Several years ago, Governor Palin and then Governor Parnell signed an administrative order creating the Governor's Coordinated Transportation Task Force. And that was really looking at how transportation is provided statewide. And as the task force was meeting, we took public testimony all over the state. And some of the issues that came up, some of the stories that were told, were from veterans living in isolated communities around the state, trying to come into urban areas or even rural areas for medical care or for job opportunities. And the lack of transportation was a big concern for them. We heard from state agencies, particularly those that work with veterans, the difficulty in terms of duplication of service and lack of coordination. And we heard from transportation organizations themselves wanting to work with our veterans and having difficulty kind of maneuvering that system. So out of that came an interest on the part of our membership to reach out to veterans, to reach out to enlisted personnel and their families, to find a way how to provide transportation for them and with them as a thank you for their service to their country. Last year, if you want to go to the next one. So as we talked about, we met with transportation providers, and they gave us some ideas on some of the challenges they were dealing with veterans issues. We talked to the VA. They were running into some eligibility requirements that were causing some problems. There was also a language barrier that folks in the military tend to speak. Like a lot of organizations have their own cultural issues, and sometimes for those outside the industry can have some challenges with that. There are demographic issues. As you know, Alaska has the highest percentage of veterans in the country as per capita. And we have veterans not only in urban areas but in isolated rural areas as well. And finally, funding was an issue in terms of funding that was available for limited populations that couldn't be extended to other groups that could coordinate for transportation. These are members of our statewide task force. Go to the next one. And we have representatives from the transit providers in Anchorage and in Juneau, government agencies with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and the Alaska VA program, the state of Alaska through the DOT and the Department of Labor, and then private veterans organizations like the Armed Forces Y, Veterans Helping Vets, and the Alaska Veterans Foundation. Some of the things, we've only been around for about 8 months, so we're still working as a group, and a lot of the time that we spend talking to each other, finding out how we can share resources and share information. And so some of the things we were able to pull together was we met several months ago with the newly installed director of the National Veterans Transportation Service Program. We provided information to the subcommittee. Subcommittee provided information at the Alaska Transit Conference last October in terms of some of the national and local and statewide studies that are dealing with veterans transportation. And then we also heard of a new program in Oklahoma looking at ways to hire veterans to work in the transit industry. So we're still meeting monthly with the group and learning new things that are going on nationally and locally as well. The second part of the project that I'm most pleased with is our Putting Veterans to Work with Public Transportation project. We were able to leverage, as I said, a small grant from the legislature last year to obtain some federal dollars to help get veterans to work. And our first grant came out this month and is going to be awarded to the Alaska Department of Labor to buy bus passes and vouchers for veterans to go to work in Anchorage, in Fairbanks, in Wasilla, and Juneau. Not only to get them to work, but get them to job training centers, other work sites, so they can get the skills that they need to go to work. We have additional resources out there, and we're going to be working with other organizations around the state to make sure that this program goes forward. So again, I want to thank the legislature for their support. We're excited about this project. Andy and myself are available to answer any questions. And Andy, do you have a few comments you wanted to put forth?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Could you please...
I wanted to address Madam Chair and the members of the committee. I'm Andy Nations, and it's been my privilege to be the project consultant working with the advisory group and in the development of the Veterans Transportation Program. Just as a little background, I was lucky to have gotten to serve the Coordinated Transportation Task Force and was very much involved in hearing the needs as this project was developing. And one thing I wanted to add to that was that I think there were needs that we were hearing from both sides of the table. We were hearing needs from the transportation providers. They were saying that they really wanted to help veterans have better access to transportation in an affordable way, but they didn't know any funding sources for helping them to do that. They thought that there might be some opportunities through the Department of Defense or through the VA, but they didn't have an avenue of communication that was giving them that information. So they were frustrated and not knowing how to go about that. On the VA side, they were telling us that they had a donut hole of veterans that didn't qualify for the transportation services that the VA was able to provide, even though those are often kind of limited, especially depending on where you live. So they were wanting to work with the transit folks to try to fill that gap and help meet the needs of those veterans that weren't able to access the VA's transportation. So those two components came together and helped. As we were forming the stakeholder group, we started right out with those needs, and we started right out hearing from opportunities that were available from both those sides, and they started right up working together. So I wanted to just add to David's list a couple of other activities that we took part in that were so exciting. And one was there was a Veterans Summit that was held in Anchorage last July, and I was able to attend that. And during that time, they had a panel of veteran service organizations that were talking specifically about veterans' needs. And I was able to listen to them, tell them about some of the things we were doing, and then we were able to bring them to the table also so that they're working with our stakeholders on the transit and the VA side and bringing the voices of the veterans. And we felt that that was so very important because those are the folks that we're wanting to serve. And they're the ones that we want to know what their needs are. So that has been a good liaison between our groups that's helped us to hear those voices. Then one other thing I wanted to mention is some of the progress that we've heard about. I've told you about so at every time we have a teleconference and everybody starts sharing information, the light bulbs start going off. And there's to be connections made that are making transportation available more and more for our veterans. One of the ways that that's happening is the our Forces Y started talking about how they are providing volunteer transportation on the bases, and they'd like to bring that transportation far enough off the bases to where the veterans and the military families and their military personnel could go to a bus stop and get on public transit. to make a connection. Those connections have been made now, and they're happening in Anchorage and in Fairbanks, and we're hoping that that's going to continue to happen in other communities. Another exciting development that's happened this summer is that the VA has signed a memorandum of understanding with the Alaska Native Healthcare System. And what that understanding has brought about is, as we all know, many of our veterans live in the very remote rural areas, and it's very expensive for them to travel into the hub communities to go to a VA clinic or access other VA services. So through this memorandum of understanding that was signed this summer, a veteran in a remote village can now go get the services that he needs at his local community health care clinic. If those services are pre-authorized, then that clinic can bill the VA for those services and be reimbursed. So that it eliminates the need for that expensive, often brutal travel for the folks to come in from those remote areas. When that first started out, that was only available for Native veterans, but that is now available for all veterans in those rural communities, Native and non-Native. So that's been really exciting news and something that all of our group has benefited from knowing. So I hope that that's shown you the collaboration that's happened so far. We're very excited about the goals that we have for the next year, trying to help get more veterans recruited into the transit industry. We've brought in resources from outside Alaska to tell us about cool things that are happening in other states to help us brainstorm ideas and make things better here in Alaska. So that'll end my part of the presentation, and I'm open for questions that anyone might have.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Nations or Mr. Levy or Mr. Hickey? All right. Well, thank you all very much for your presentations. Very
thank
interesting.
You.
Thank you.
So if there are no more questions, this meeting is adjourned. It is 20 minutes to 3:00.